Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today on episode number 62 of the show, we are reviewing an older movie from 1940. That's right, it's 80 years old this year, which is crazy to believe. It's The Philadelphia Story, starring none other than Katharine Hepburn, Jimmy Stewart, and Cary Grant. So we will be talking about that coming up in a few minutes. I will say this is on HBO Max under the Turner Classic Movies Library. That's where I watched it. Katie, did you watch it there? Or did you just rent it somewhere?
I rented it off YouTube, but it was only $4. It was $4 well spent. I had seen the movie before, but I hadn't watched it in a while. And I did want to say my mom, I blame my mom for this episode in a positive way, because she said, I would love for you to cover a classic older movie. And okay. I realized, Jared, that we hadn't done that yet, which is bizarre, because I am so obsessed with old movies. And that's why I fell in love with movie making anyway. And so I don't know why we hadn't done this, but I'm really glad we did. So thank you, Mom, for the recommendation.
And I will say, too, if you're a fan of classic movies, or if you know somebody that's a fan of classic movies, HBO Max actually does have, with that Turner Classic Movies library, a really good library of classic films. Like, this is on there. Citizen Kane, Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, they're all on there. So if you have somebody that really likes classic movies, I would highly suggest getting a subscription to HBO Max, because if you want to watch a lot of classic movies, there's a lot on there, which I feel like is a thing that other streaming services don't really have a lot of. Some will have one or two from time to time, but none of them really have like 20 or 30 all grouped together kind of for you to watch.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to say I love this movie. And also, I did not want to forget. I wanted to give a shout out to a new listener. So I have a friend named Jeff. We grew up together and went to church together back in Indiana. And he just started listening to the podcast, but he made it known this week. It just brightened my whole day, because you and I had talked about how all podcasters have been affected because people are not going to the gym as much. They're not driving as much. Yeah. So like kind of listenership can be down.
Yep.
And I had been kind of privately sad about it. So the fact that he reached out and he was like, I love your podcast. He said, we both have great voices for podcasts, and he's already listened to multiple episodes. So thank you, Jeff. I wanted to give a shout out. I won't give your last name because Tom Hanks and other people might listen to the show, and I don't want people to come find you, you know?
Yep. Well, thanks to Jeff for listening to the show. Thanks, Jeff, our new listener here on the Silver Screen Podcast. And just one news item for today. This broke last week after we recorded our last episode, which was on Selma, which you can go back and listen to. Shameless plug for that one. But the Oscars and the Academy has invited 819 members in its campaign to diversify the Academy. So they've invited 819 new people to come into the Academy. What that means is that they can vote on the various categories that are nominated for the Oscars. And the new class is 36% people of color and 45% women, which is great to hear. So some of the names that got invited into the Academy that are now Academy members include Zendaya, Awkwafina, Cynthia Erivo, John David Washington, Florence Pugh, Lakeith Stanfield, Ana de Armas, and then some directors such as Ari Aster, Matthew Vaughn also on the list, and some actors from Parasite also were invited to join the Academy as well.
Whoa, that's amazing. I'm also surprised some of those people were not already part of the Academy. And this is 100% unrelated to what you just said, but I just thought of some news myself.
Okay.
Did you see Timothy Chalamet probably has a new girlfriend?
Does he? I did not see that.
Do you know Isa Gonzalez that was in Baby Driver? I'm trying to think. Also, I've heard Isa, I think it's Isa Gonzalez, but she's, of course, stunning.
Yeah.
Not that I was holding out for Timmy, but I'm just letting you know that is top news. And I know I'm not the only one who is deeply upset about this.
And he's dating a little up, too, because she's 30 years old and he's only 24.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. And I hope he listens to the show. I love him. And I used to go for that really like tall, lanky look that he has.
Yeah.
But I look at her and I look at him and I'm just surprised. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it is a little
surprising.
But
they're both gorgeous. They're gorgeous in their own rights. They're just different. I would have never put these two together.
Yeah. Also, his birthday is very close to yours. It's December 27th.
That's right.
Yeah.
I thought it was. Yeah, it's right around there. I mean, but we're like 8 years apart, so no big deal. It's fine. Well.
So
he's within my 10-year age range, Jared.
He is. And I did not know that Timothée Chalamet had a new girlfriend. You know, I'm not, I keep up on more of the movie like business side of news, and you keep up on
you
what
do.
The stars are doing. So I think that balances out well. So
yes, thank you so much. I think so too. I think some people listen to this podcast because they want to hear what you're saying. And some people are like, I just want to hear the hot gossip of Hollywood.
Who's the new relationship? So
yeah. Wow, but congrats to all the new Academy members. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. And I see that Timothée Chalamet and her are on vacation right now. Or were
they
last week in Cabo San Lucas. Mm-hmm. So
I know.
And they just
no
made
deal.
Out a lot. So, I mean,
yep,
sure.
Sure
you
did.
You do you, guys.
I'm not too ashamed to say I looked at the pictures.
So that's all for news. We don't have any corrections this week, so we'll move into some recommendations of what we're watching and reading right now. I'll say that we both watched Hamilton on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. We have also both seen it in person before, not obviously with the original cast, but you saw it in Dayton and I saw it in Chicago. So we both had an understanding of it coming into seeing it on Disney Plus. We had heard the music before, we knew what it was about, things like that. So, but still cool to see it on Disney Plus. And I think seeing it with the original cast was also really neat. And the fact that you're right there kind of on the stage with them, so you can see all their facial expressions and movements and things like that, which can be hard if you're in a theater, especially depending on how far back you are to actually see some of that stuff.
Definitely. And I wanted to tell you, I saw it in Columbus. And the only reason I tell you that is because today they announced that it's coming to Dayton in 2022.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
So they said the news brief or whatever said that they've been working on getting Hamilton to come here since 2018.
Okay.
But then because of COVID and stuff, they know that the show won't be able to be here until 2022. So they haven't released prices or anything yet. But I was like, well, do I need to see it again? Probably.
Yeah. And it was in Indy this past year over the Christmas holiday time, like in December. It was in Indianapolis. I did not go to that because I had seen it in Chicago like a year before that. And tickets to Hamilton are pricey. But when it comes to Dayton, I may have to make a road trip to Dayton in 2022 to see it again. Sure. But that's great. If you haven't seen it on Disney Plus, definitely check that out. Another thing that I'm still watching is Top Chef, which is on Hulu. So almost done with the season that I'm watching. We're down to the final three. So it's getting, you know, dicey in terms of who's going to win the season of Top Chef, which I could very easily look up with spoilers, but I haven't done so yet. And then I know you're reading a few things as well. Still cruising through books during this time.
Yes, I'm a little ashamed of myself. I have not been watching much TV. I guess that's good, but at the same time, I don't have great TV recommendations from people. But
yeah.
I've read several books in the last week. I read Riley Sager is someone that I mentioned in several episodes, at least. I've read three of his books now this year. He has four. But his newest one I got from Book of the Month. Shout out every episode. But it's called Home Before Dark. This thing, I had a really like kind of not a great weekend over 4th of July. There was one night I just couldn't sleep. I was upset about a lot of things and I stayed up half the night reading. It was over 400 pages and I finished it in 2 days. It was excellent. It's a ghost story, which normally I don't go for ghost stories because I don't usually believe them. But it's like a fictional ghost story. It was excellent. And then for the last 2 days, I'm going to finish it tonight, but I've been reading How to Hepburn, Lessons from Kate the Great, or Lessons on Living from Kate the Great.
Okay.
And it's by Karen Carbo with a K, and it is about Katharine Hepburn. And then the last thing I wanted to recommend is The Choice, Embrace the Possible. I don't want to leave off the Embrace the Possible because The Choice is also a book by Nicholas Sparks. This one I would say is significantly better than that one.
Okay.
This is written by Dr. Edith Ava Eiger or Egger. It's E-G-E-R. She is a Holocaust survivor. She is 90 years old. The book is phenomenal. I didn't even mean to read. I've already read two Holocaust books this year.
Okay.
By survivors. But the book is incredible. She became a psychiatrist. Please forgive me. I do get them mixed up. But she met Dr. Joseph Mengele, the angel of death that we hear about. Like I remember learning about him. She met him and he spared her life and her sister multiple times. They almost died. She grew up, like got married, had children, has lived a relatively calm existence. But it is a fantastic book and I read it. It's our, book club book for our work that I'm in charge of. But, Bill Gates recommended it because he did his five top summer reads or whatever. Oh, yep. And this was one of the ones. So fantastic. The Kate book is cute about Katharine Hepburn, but I would definitely recommend The Choice as my top pick. And then Home Before Dark by Riley Sager. And Riley, his last name is Sager, but I highly recommend his books. They're usually like thrillers or mysteries and they're fantastic.
Nice. Yeah. The Bill Gates summer reading list that he does every year and and Barack Obama's things I watched, listened to, read this year that he does at the end of the year. You can always get good recommendations from those on there. Because normally, especially with Barack's list, that will span like a lot of different genres. Like he'll do his favorite albums that he listened to and he might have like some jazz album in there and then like, you know, Drake's new album or Lady Gaga's new album or something like that. So it's very like diverse, his taste. So yeah, cool. I'll have to check that one out. And also congratulations to Riley Sager. I was just looking at his Twitter and that book, Home Before Dark, is going to debut at number 8 on the New York Times bestseller list this week.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah, it's really, really good. So I highly recommend it.
Congrats to him on that. So with that, we'll move into our review of The Philadelphia Story. This movie was nominated for 6 Oscars and won 2, which we'll talk about below. It's actually Jimmy Stewart's only win for acting, which is, when you think of his movies, you might not think of this one as the one he won for, but this is what he won for. So we'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. It was released January 17th of 1941. May have also been in some theaters December 1st of 1940, depending on where it was. Again, theaters can do, like we've said before, where they release in big cities and then kind of expand nationwide. Also, there were less theaters at that time, and they were still using like actual film, so it may have just taken longer to get some places than other places, honestly. So it's not rated, which is kind of funny. The MPAA wasn't super strict on ratings back then. I'd say if I had to rate it today, what would you make? A PG maybe? Like somewhere around
maybe
there?
Maybe PG. Maybe. Only because there's illusions of like sexual content or drinking. But
yeah,
it's,
that would
to
be
me,
it.
It's very tame. I would say by 2020 standards, it's definitely G.
Yeah, it's very tame. So it's 1 hour and 52 minutes. IMDb 7.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes 100% critics, 93% audience. So high praise for this movie all around. And then box office wise, domestically $404,000, worldwide $411,000. That doesn't count for inflation. That's 1940s money. So
yeah, so that means nothing really.
Yeah,
right now
it doesn't really mean much. But if you don't know, the synopsis of this movie is when a rich woman's ex-husband and a tabloid type reporter turn up just before her planned remarriage, she begins to learn the truth about herself. So, and the newspaper writers, Jimmy Stewart plays a newspaper writer, short story writer, and he is from Philadelphia. So that's why it's called The Philadelphia Story. And the wedding is also taking place there as well. So that's how it gets its name, of The Philadelphia Story. So some critics reviews now. First, we have Edwin Schallert of the Los Angeles Times, who says Miss Hepburn as a comedian is perhaps a greater star than she ever was at any prior cinema's period as a serious actor. This comes near being her champion achievement. And obviously
that's the truth.
Yeah, she acted for a long time after this as well. But this is, I think, considered one of her best roles in terms of movies that she's been in. So next up is Jeff Andrew of Time Out, who says Cukor and Donald Ogden Stewart's evergreen version of Philip Barry's romantic farce centering on a socialite wedding threatened by scandal is a delight from start to finish, with everyone involved working on peak form. And then finally is Bosley Crother of the New York Times, who says it has been a long time since Hollywood has spent itself so extravagantly and to such entertaining effect upon a straight upper crust fable, an unblushing apologia for plutocracy, which means government by the wealthy. So
yes,
we looked it up before the episode. So
that was a new plutocracy is a newer word for me. So I thought that was also, I wanted to point out Bosley Crother sounds like the most New York Times writer's name I've ever heard.
Especially like
what else was he going to do with this?
That
life
review is, but like imagine him in the 40s, like it's Bosley Crother with the New York Times movie review.
You know, he's into the cinema that we've talked about before.
Oh, for sure.
His picture, I did on Rotten Tomatoes when I was looking at different critics reviews. It looks like a picture from the 1940s. So
okay.
I don't know for certain that he's passed away, but I do think this man was, I feel like this was an earlier quote. I will say that.
He, I just Googled it. He has passed away. He died in 1981 at the age of 75. He was a journalist and film critic for the New York Times for 27 years. So
way to go, man.
Did that for quite a while. And he reviewed a lot of movies, and he especially liked to review foreign language films in the 50s and 60s. So he focused a lot on those too. So,
Jared, I have something embarrassing to share with you.
Okay.
When I was researching the cast members today,
yeah,
I went to go search, as I usually do, for their upcoming films. I really did this. And then I realized what I was doing, because I was like, 1994? What? And then I was like,
where's the 2022 project?
It's like, this person hasn't done anything. This sounds like I thought about it for minutes. I caught it instantly, but yeah. I do want to let everyone know I initially went to go look for the next projects. But that also tells you we just have not done these old classic movies. So I'm just in the habit of looking at the next, Christopher Nolan film they're going
to
star
in. We always go look at their IMDb to see what is coming up, but we haven't done
a movie. Unfortunately, all these people have passed away.
Yeah.
All director, writers, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So this is directed by George Cukor, who's a world famous director known for the second version of A Star is Born with Judy Garland, My Fair Lady with Audrey Hepburn, and then Adam's Rib, which starred real life lovers, Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy. But there was a scandal kind of involved with this movie. So do you want to go into that, Katie?
Yes. Here's the tea. So George Cukor was originally hired to be the director for Gone with the Wind. I believe I've mentioned my love of the movie, although it has its problems, I understand. But anyway, shortly after filming, about 3 weeks in, he was fired and was replaced by Victor Fleming, who ultimately did direct the film and got the credit. So Cukor is not even credited on the film. And there's all sorts of theories as to why. Like, I really did try to look, but there wasn't consistency with the theories. But I just was saying, like, can you imagine being fired from Gone with the Wind? And then it goes on to become one of the most influential films of all time. That'd be like working on something like Titanic.
Yeah.
And then Star Wars, something like that. And then you're fired, or The Godfather, and then it goes on to be this cinematic masterpiece and you don't even get a credit in it. So I feel really bad for George Cukor. I just wanted to point that out, but I didn't know him personally. He could have been a horrible person, but, so that's the scandal with the film.
Yeah. And there's another point to that too, is that Katharine Hepburn wanted Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy to be in this movie.
Yes.
Both had other commitments, but Cukor and Gable didn't get along very well in Gone with the Wind, obviously, since he was fired. So I don't know if that would have worked out for this movie either. It just didn't seem like they had a good relationship, the two of them together. So they are obviously...
One of the theories was... One of the theories was that Clark Gable had him fired.
Okay.
So that could be.
Which, I mean, makes sense. I mean, Hollywood was a different time back then, and movie stars were... I mean, movie stars are powerful today, but back then, movie stars basically held all the power. So if they didn't want somebody working on a movie, they just told them and said, hey, we got to get somebody new in on this movie. So
yes.
Instead, we have Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart as replacements, which I think are fine. So I think as far as trying to replace Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy, we did pretty well. So we'll take a quick break here on the Silver Screen podcast, and then we will come back and talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for The Philadelphia Story. And we're back here on the Silver Screen podcast talking about The Philadelphia Story. We'll get into the actors coming up here in just a second. But first, we mentioned that Jimmy Stewart won an Oscar for this film. The other Oscar that this movie won was for writing. Donald Ogden Stewart won an Oscar for Best Writing Screenplay for this film, which is now the Best Adapted Screenplay category at the Academy Awards, because this is based off of a play that Katharine Hepburn was in. So that's the other Academy Award that it won. We did mention, though, it was nominated for 6 Oscars. So quite a lot of Oscars that year. And now we'll get into the cast, starting with Katharine Hepburn.
Jared, I'm going to need just a few crush alerts for the entire cast, please. Thank you, sir. Katharine Hepburn, absolutely one of my favorite actresses of all time. She is not to be confused, though, with Audrey Hepburn, who might be my favorite person of all time. Audrey Hepburn and Katharine were not related, but a lot of people think they are, or a lot of people know that I love someone with the last name Hepburn, and they think that I'm talking about Katharine. I'm always talking about Audrey. But Catherine was wonderful. And to clarify, we spell Catherine differently. So she plays Tracy Lord in this film, which is just a fantastic name. Okay, so Jared, I did a fun game this time.
Okay.
Every actor, the classic actor, I put them with a modern day actor.
Okay.
Because a lot of people, if they listen to this podcast, might not be into older movies, or they might be more into older movies and we need to get their attention. Please come back to the podcast. Mm-hmm. Catherine Hepburn, definitely I likened to Meryl Streep. Okay. Kate was considered one of the greatest actresses of her time. I think she is still considered to be one of the greatest actresses of all time. She was nominated for 12 acting Oscars, Jared. That was the most at the time of anyone ever, but Meryl Streep is the person that surpassed her, I believe, with 19 nominations at this point.
I think so.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry for coughing. So Catherine Hepburn ended up winning 4. She won for Morning Glory, On Golden Pond, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and The Lion in Winter. She's best known for basically everything she was ever in, but I would say the highlight reel is The African Queen. That's with Humphrey Bogart, The Philadelphia Story, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. That is with Sidney Poitier and Spencer Tracy. Phenomenal movie. And The Lion in Winter, which if you did, my dad never picks favorites and he'll tell you his whole theory why. But if you ever asked my dad and he had to pick a favorite movie, I would bet you $1 million he would pick The Lion in Winter. It is his absolute favorite.
Good to know. Also, Meryl has been nominated for 21 acting Oscars.
Oh, shoot.
And she's she's won 3 times for The Iron Lady, Sophie's Choice, and Kramer versus Kramer. So
what kind of a fan am I?
I don't know.
Oh, you're right. So I was wrong about that part, but Catherine Hepburn, I know you and I looked up winning 4 is the most anybody's ever won.
Yep. Yes. That's correct. Yep.
So I wanted to give some background too on these actors, just because people might not be as familiar. And a lot of this I didn't even have to look up because I'm so obsessed with these old movies and these actors. But Catherine Hepburn was born in Hartford, Connecticut. So she basically was Tracy Lord. She kind of grew up kind of in an old money way. And she had a really interesting life. She was very, very outspoken, brash. She didn't wear makeup. She wore pants all the time. She actually, Diane Keaton reminds me a lot of her her style elements. Catherine Hepburn did get married once, not to Spencer Tracy. It was a very short-lived marriage, but they stayed friends until they died. She never had children. That was completely by choice. She did not want them. And she carried on. And by carried on, I mean had a love affair with Spencer Tracy for most of his life until he died. That was right before she made The Lion in Winter. And then she lived to be 96 years old. So good long life there.
Yes, for sure.
Yes. Next up, we have Jimmy Stewart. He is billed in the film as James Stewart, but I think we're close friends, so I call him Jimmy. He plays Macaulay Connor, and
not
he
Macaulay
is the
Culkin.
Tom Hanks. Right, and it's spelled, I think it's, man, it might not be spelled differently. I think it is spelled the same way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it is a little different.
Okay.
I think there's a K in Macaulay Culkin's name.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not going to corrections corner this. Just know that he's not Macaulay Culkin. Anyway. Jimmy Stewart is the Tom Hanks of his time. And it makes sense that he is one of my all-time favorite actors, both because of that and because he was phenomenal. Jared, he graduated from Princeton University. And he is also one of my mom's favorite actors. And she loves to tell me that he was born in Indiana, Pennsylvania. There is an actual city called Indiana. And then he and his wife, Gloria, had 2 sons and 2 daughters. They had twin daughters, which my mom also loves. He was married to Gloria their whole lives. Never divorced, never had affairs. Very admirable. But he did, unfortunately, one of his sons died in the Vietnam War. Jimmy Stewart was also in the army, was very proud of it. He served in World War II and retired as a brigadier general. So he was pretty high up there. Mm-hmm. And then he won just like you mentioned, a Best Lead Actor Oscar for his performance in this film. But you might also recognize him from It's a Wonderful Life, my all-time favorite Christmas movie, Rear Window, that's a Hitchcock film, and mm-hmm. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I would recommend everyone who listens to this, if you want some powerful films to watch during this time that I've mentioned from this podcast, please watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's about politics and filibusters.
Yep.
And watch Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which is about interracial marriage. And it was the first film to ever do so. And it's phenomenal. And then he was nominated for 5 acting Oscars during his career. In addition to this movie, he won an honorary Oscar in 1985.
Also, I like how It's a Wonderful Life is still very popular today. So every year at Christmas time, you get to see Jimmy Stewart again, because normally some TV channel will be showing it. So, which that's a great, great performance by him, and the other movies that you mentioned too. He's great in those as well. So I like that he still has some relevance today, because that movie has become so timeless and synonymous with Christmas that it's still watched and shown every year during the holidays. So
definitely he's in a ton of films too. I've seen a lot of his work, but he was also in Harvey, which is about a fake bunny, but I never really liked Harvey very much, I have to say.
No.
Anyway, have you seen that one?
I have not, but Allison's brother was in a production of that for his senior year of high school. So I went to a production of Harvey to see it. So I did see it. Not that the acting and the performances weren't great in the high school production.
It's
just the story wasn't that interesting to me, like the source material.
It's fine. Just not his best, but I thought about putting it on here, but I didn't. Okay. Next we have, what a hunk. Cary Grant, spelled C-A-R-Y, just so everybody knows, he was a male named Cary, which is not unusual, just I think some people don't know that. He played, this name is so New England, C.K. Dexter Haven. Just phenomenal.
And he makes ships in the movie. That's his thing. So it totally fits.
He is such a stud too. Jimmy Stewart was very handsome as well, but Cary Grant is one of the most classically beautiful men I've ever seen. I equate him to George Clooney. Mm-hmm. He was not a bachelor his whole life, and neither is George, but just saying, that's exactly, if you need to envision someone, George Clooney is your man. Cary Grant was known for North by Northwest, another Hitchcock film that I adore, To Catch a Thief, also Hitchcock, His Girl Friday, and my favorite Audrey Hepburn movie ever, Charade. It's the one that Arjun has watched with me.
Okay.
His given name at birth was Archibald Alec Leach, and he was originally from England, which I think explains a lot of his charm and his manners. I do think Cary Grant was a great, great acting name to go with after Archibald Alec Leach. But then I thought that would be a great Who Wants to Be a Millionaire question. If they were what's Cary Grant's real name? I don't know why that's immediately what I thought. Anyway, he was nominated for 2 acting Oscars in his life, but he didn't win. However, he also went on to receive an honorary Oscar in 1970. So these three are absolutely top actors of their time and 3 of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, I wanted to share with you that the American Film Institute back in 1999 did a AFI's 100 Years, 100 Stars. And basically it was anybody that was acting, made their screen debut before or in 1950. So older Hollywood actors. So to share with you the list real quick, the top 3 female legends, Audrey Hepburn at number 3. Betty Davis at number 2, and then Katherine Hepburn at number 1.
Yep.
So she's
that
number 1 on that list.
That all makes sense.
And then
Audrey would be my number 1.
Yes.
Betty would be my 2. Katherine would be my 3.
And then on the male list, number 3, Jimmy Stewart, number 2, Cary Grant, and then number 1, Humphrey Bogart. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, ability-wise, Humphrey would be my 3rd pick.
Yeah.
Tough call between Jimmy and Cary.
Probably going to give it to Jimmy a little bit, just in terms of
likability. I think I'd give
it
to Jimmy, especially if I think he's like Tom Hanks. I have to give him number 1.
Yeah. So just to put some perspective in things, this would be like today if, I don't know, if George Clooney, Meryl Streep, and Tom Hanks were all kind of in a movie together, which Meryl and Tom were in The Post together, so that did happen there. But imagine you had them and then another huge star that was in the movie too. So that's what that's what this was for the time it came out. So with that, moving to some likes and dislikes, my first like with the movie is that this movie is obviously older and came out in 1940s. But my point is that if a movie is good, it will always hold up. It'll stand the test of time. And this is it. I watched this for the first time this week, 80 years later after it came out. And it was still enjoyable. It was still funny. It was still fun to watch. The performances were very good. So if a movie is done well, I think it can be very timeless. And I think that's what this movie has going for it in certain aspects, is that it is a very timeless movie and still fun to watch even today. Sometimes older movies, depending on the movie, I can get bored with them a little bit, just if they aren't, super great, or maybe they just tend to move a little slower too than current day movies do, just because that was a slower time period of life and people didn't have tons of technology and stuff like that. So everything wasn't coming at them, you know, 70 miles a minute. So they're a little slower in their pacing sometimes, and sometimes can be a little simpler with their story. But this was really good. And I just wanted to say that, you know, if a movie is good, it will hold up throughout decades. And that's definitely the case with this movie.
You said that beautifully, Jared. I completely agree. This is part of what I love so much about older movies like this, is that they do withstand the test of time. And also, like, they're wholesome without being totally ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
I don't think, one of my dislikes is that I don't think this is completely realistic. However, I also think there was such class. Like, at the end, this is kind of a spoiler, but this is 80 years old. But Katharine Hepburn is... she's supposed to marry some guy who we don't even care about. Won't even mention him. Mm-hmm. But she then kind of falls for Jimmy Stewart. And then she decides she's going to remarry Cary Grant, her first husband. And I just think that is a lot to happen within the span of like 48 hours. At the same time, though, I think everybody dealt with it so well, which I don't think we see today. We see people like kill other people over adultery mm-hmm. and stuff. This, no adultery was committed, but it was just like... you know, she kind of wandered off with Jimmy Stewart and went swimming yeah. with him and stuff and did things that are a little untoward. But Cary Grant was such a class act about it. Her fiance was pretty tame about it. And I wish people were more like that now, more understanding and kind of genteel. But I totally agree with you. Like, the film holds up and it's entertaining without being like, there's nothing... not garish. I'm trying to think. There's nothing salacious about it.
No.
They didn't have to throw like sex scenes in there and a bunch of language and gore. It's just like a sweet story with a good plot, and that's it. And that's all it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. And I really do enjoy the ending of this movie, because it's really kind of, the ending, it's a simple story, but the ending, really, Katharine Hepburn looks a lot at herself as her character and tries to evaluate what's best for her. But I think I really enjoyed the ending, how she's like, you know, Jimmy Stewart proposes to her and she's like, you know, I don't think I want to marry you. And that makes sense as a viewer, because you're like, they had a very short time span together. They were both under the influence of some champagne and some wine. So, you know, that was maybe more of like just a heat of passion type thing, more of a lustful type relationship there than actually a love type relationship. And she realizes that and she says, I don't think you want to marry me. And actually, your photographer wants to marry you. You're just too idiotic to realize it. So
yeah.
That's who you should really be with. But then even when Cary Grant, you know, proposes to her once again, he goes right over to Jimmy Stewart. He says, hey, will you be my best man? He's like, yep, no problem. And then they go and do the ceremony really quick. And another thing that I like about older movies is that when the story's done, the movie just ends. So many movies nowadays yes. wrap up their plot and then there's 20 minutes of stuff after that, which is pointless because you already know the end of the story and it just mm-hmm. adds a runtime to it. Whereas this is like the wedding happens and then the cast list pops up and then we're done. And then that's the end of the movie.
Yes. I put one of my things, it's the simplicity of everything in general. It's the mm-hmm. simplicity of the story, the innocence of the story. Just you're exactly right. Like it doesn't linger. Like they tell the story and they're like, this is good. Let's leave it in the sweet spot. I don't know why more movies don't do this. Another thing I wanted to mention was I love the overall look and feel of the film, like the setting in general. I love where it takes place. I love the background, the scene designs. And I even yeah. feel like they didn't have to do much. It's basically all on this one property, this house, mm-hmm. this beautiful house and the grounds. And Jared, I cannot forget to talk about the costumes. They are to die for. The 40s, I definitely know I've mentioned it to everyone in the world, but the 40s is my favorite clothing decade of all time, design wise. And this is all in the 40s. And I would wear every single thing that Katharine Hepburn wears in this film.
That makes sense. So also, even though the film's in black and white, you can still tell the style. Like at one point, yes. Jimmy Stewart had a really cool suit on and I was like, ooh, that's a cool suit. Like just the design right. of the suit, even though you couldn't really see the colors fully. So, and Katharine Hepburn too, that makes sense as well, that those outfits were definitely iconic for their day. And like you said, the 40s, very, very big time period for fashion as well. So, and I wanted to say another one of my final likes was the little girl in this movie, Dinah, who is
yes.
very adorable and obviously like wise beyond her years and is eavesdropping on all the conversations that are happening yeah. in this film.
Her character's great. Yeah.
Yeah, so she really provides a lot of comedy in this movie, honestly, with her lines and stuff like that. So, but I really liked her character as well. And she is Katharine Hepburn's character's sister, correct? Younger sister?
Yes,
is that correct?
Yeah, okay. Way younger. Yep.
Yeah, and way younger. So
that reminds me just like the cast in general. I feel like people will already understand how much I admire these actors. And we didn't mention the supporting cast, but there wasn't a huge supporting cast, but the ones mm-hmm. that are there are phenomenal and add so much to the story. And like even they, I'm trying to think of the woman's name that is with Jimmy Stewart. I'm trying to think of the actress's name. It's Rosamund.
Oh yeah.
Rosalind.
Who plays the photographer.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, I remember, I saw a couple articles even talking about her in this film because she was such a standout character in it. But the actors are fantastic. I totally agree with you. And the sweet sister character is just hysterical. She adds so much of the comedy.
Yes. Also, Ruth Hussey is her name.
Thank you. It's Ruth Hussey. That's
yes.
right. That's
and
right.
She was nominated for an Oscar for her role in this.
I thought so.
She was. So cool. Before we move on to dislikes, I just wanted to bring this up real fast. I thought that it was interesting. This isn't really a like or a dislike, but interesting that this movie focuses on divorce and multiple relationships for the time period that it is set in. I feel like that is mm-hmm. was maybe kind of a taboo topic in the 40s. So the fact that she's trying to decide basically between three different men who she wants to be with, and she's gotten divorced to one and she's engaged to another one, but she doesn't know if, and the fact that they break off their engagement the day of the wedding and don't get married. I just thought that was an interesting story to tell in a movie for that time period. And obviously this is a very successful movie, got nominated for a lot of Oscars, did well at the box office for the time it was released. So I just wanted to ask you about that, what you thought about the fact that this movie does touch on that a lot. And that's mainly the whole plot of the movie.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I am surprised this is the 40s, because if I were to guess, I would have thought this was a story maybe made in the 60s or something mm-hmm. when that not necessarily was okay, but it was much more understood and people that started to become a thing.
Yeah.
But I do think all three of the actors handled it beautifully. And I also really like Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant's characters. No one really, you know, trash talks the other one. You can see that very first scene where we only see them interacting like physically, where she's breaking his golf clubs, which that would never happen like that, but that's fine. She doesn't go on telling everybody like he did this to me and playing the blame game and I hate him and talking about alimony and stuff. It's just so different than the feel we get in movies today where people are getting divorced. So I even like how they handled that. It was just classy is the kind of the word that I describe this, but I was surprised as well to answer your question. I'm just surprised that this was a topic they covered in early 1940s movie.
Yeah, for sure. So with that, we'll move on to our dislikes. We don't have too many for this movie. The first, though, is that this movie is a little unrealistic. They kind of live in a fantasy world. It doesn't seem like money is really an issue for any of the big characters in this movie. They have, like, Jimmy Stewart's character is really not on deadline at all to get this story turned in so that they can publish it. Like, it's very laissez-faire, like, just do whatever you want while you're there. And however long it takes is how long it takes. So, and he falls in love with his interview subject, which is usually not a good journalist practice. So, but that's just some things that I noticed. And the fact that like, they all just have like that whole, you know, just a lot of, it seems like they, I mean, you don't really know what Katharine Hepburn does as a job, if she does have a job, and they have a lot of time to prepare for this wedding as well.
Yeah. So much of it, unrealistic is the word that I kept thinking of. It's just so much of this that you mentioned, I agree with. It just didn't make sense to me. And I even mentioned already about like the divorce. It just seems so amicable, which I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but it just doesn't seem to be the case usually. And even the fact that, you know, I completely understand people can fall in and out of love quickly or mm-hmm. fall in lust with someone. All of these things can happen quickly, but it's odd that all of this happened within like 72 hours at most. That's just a bit extreme. And I understand it's the drama. Like that's what makes it so absurd and also amusing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to me, it was just slightly too unrealistic for me, but I still love it.
Yes. We also do have to mention this movie was filmed in the 1940s. So there is a racist reference in the movie, which is obviously a dislike. So wanted to point that out, that was not great. Obviously, it was a different time period, so things were different 80 years ago, but still not great that that is in this movie.
Yes. And we wanted to call it out too, because that's part of what we're trying to learn to do better mm-hmm. too. And this is also something that I feel not everybody would know, but when Jimmy Stewart and his the other journalist, I can't think of her name. I'm sorry. I'm having so much trouble with the names. But when she comes in, when Ruth Hussey's character comes
Elizabeth is her name.
Yes. Thank you, Elizabeth. She comes in and she says something about pickaninnies. And if people don't know, that is totally not an appropriate word. It never really was, but it's definitely not now. But it is essentially it's a racial caricature of children, black children during the Jim Crow era. So definitely not appropriate in today's society. So definitely if you hear it, please call it out. But we would be remiss if we didn't comment on that in the film. So I wasn't pleased with that, but it is definitely better than a lot of the other movies I've seen in the 40s where people were much more insensitive than that.
Yes, for sure. And final dislike is that it is just a little bit too long. It's 1 hour 52 minutes, which is kind of long for a movie that is older. Normally most of those clock in at like 90-80 minutes, somewhere around there, because they're unless you're watching Gone with the Wind, because that's, you know, 7 hours. But other than that, most of them are a little bit shorter, so it was just a little bit too long. I don't know what I would cut out. I'd think it'd be almost maybe some stuff in the beginning, actually. I normally don't say that, but I think it would be some stuff before they actually all show up to the house together and they're all interacting with each other. That like 30 minutes it takes for them to actually get to the house and for Jimmy Stewart and, you know, Elizabeth to get there and start, you know, interacting mm-hmm. with her and stuff like that. So
completely agree. I don't know specific scenes, but it would definitely be the beginning, because I feel like it was kind of like, it's a little slower to start. It's exciting the first 5 minutes, but then I do think it kind of gets a little like, let's get moving. But the last like hour is just solid gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really agreed. Good. I think it's slightly too long.
Yes. Also, before we give our scores, this movie was adapted in 1956 as a musical called High Society, which had Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly, and Frank Sinatra in it. I have not seen that. I didn't know if you had seen that. Is it similar to the story of this? And how does it kind of turn it into a musical? That's kind of interesting.
As far as I remember, it's the same, but I've only seen it, or it's very similar, but I've only seen it once, and it was years ago.
Okay.
So I don't know an honest answer to that question, but I do know that it's... but Grace Kelly was also phenomenal too.
Yes. So, and Louis Armstrong did some music for the movie. So you know it's good if Louis was involved.
Yes.
mm-hmm. So with that, we'll give our scores for The Philadelphia Story. You can go ahead and go first on this episode and tell me what you would rate this.
Well, I think my parents would be disappointed in me if I didn't give this a high score. I would be disappointed too, because mm-hmm. I do. These are three of my favorite actors. The story, its simplicity, and it's just charming and innocent. And sometimes that's all I want, and it's exactly what I want. And I do wish more films kind of took some, I don't know, some cues from this film, if you mm-hmm. will.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't like the racist remark. I do think some of this is slightly too absurd to believe, and it's a little bit long. But 96, it's very high up there. It's a great movie, and it's really hard to find things I don't like about it.
Nice. And you mentioned like the simplicity of it. And I think that reminds me of like one of my favorite movies from last year, Peanut Butter Falcon, just in the fact that that's such a simplistic story as well. And really just talks about like the American life and how it's easygoing and how you should have fun and things like that. So I appreciate the serious movies from time to time. Like the past couple of episodes, we've definitely been focusing on more serious films like Selma and like Just Mercy and things like that. But it is also nice to watch a movie like this that is more just relaxing and kind of just fun mm-hmm. to check out, and takes your mind off coronavirus and everything else going on in the world right now for 2 hours.
For right now.
Yeah. So
it takes your mind out of darkness.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 90. So that's my score for The Philadelphia Story. So very high for me. Really enjoyed it. I had never seen it before, like I said, before this episode. So definitely one of my favorites that I've watched this year in terms of, you know, new movies that I haven't seen before. So
awesome. And if people do listen to the podcast, please reach out to us. If you want more old movies, we would love to know, because there's plenty of movies we can watch. And we still mm-hmm. want to focus on movies about the black community as well. But if you really like old movies and want us to switch it up, tell us. We'd be happy to do that.
And we've still got a while before anything's going to be coming out in theaters. So we definitely can use more suggestions. That is definitely welcome. So and if you're listening to this in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you might be listening, be sure to rate and review the show. That always helps. You can just leave a little star rating or write a little blurb about the show. That definitely helps us out. And we thank you very much for those. And you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Instagram and Twitter. And then just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and it'll pop up there. You can find us and like the page. And that's also a great place to leave us suggestions as well in terms of, I would like to see you guys review this movie, or what about this one? Or that's a really good place to tell us those things, because we check that quite often. So we're always looking at social media to see what your suggestions might be. And then our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, we have, no surprise, another Tom Hanks movie. Any movie that Tom Hanks is in, we review on this show. And that will be Greyhound, which is on Apple TV Plus. And when you're hearing this, it will already be on Apple TV Plus, but that'll be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. And I'm intrigued by this movie. I don't know if it's going to be one of Tom Hanks' best movies. Looking at the trailers and stuff, I'm a little skeptical, but it is a new movie and it has Tom Hanks in it. And right now, that's great. So it was supposed to come out in theaters, and then Apple TV Plus bought it and are dropping it there. So that's where you can watch it. So that'll be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, talking about Greyhound.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.